Canadian Outdoors. From Rangeley to Eastport, Fort Kent to Kittery, the Maine Outdoors is waiting for all of us to see. The mountains, lakes, and rivers, the wildlife, and the woods are just outside your doorway. So get outside and find it in the Maine Outdoors. Fishing and hunting, winter, spring, summer, and fall. If it happens in the Maine Outdoors, they talk about it all. Just tune in your radio to 103.9. Jim and Paul and Bob and Matt are your Outdoors Hotline. Each Sunday night at 7 on WVOM. To find out what is happening, just listen to the radio to the Maine Outdoors.
Welcome to the Maine Outdoors. Here's tonight's host, V. Paul Reynolds.
Thank you, sir, and good evening, one and all, and welcome to the Maine Outdoors, Maine's most enduring, longest-running outdoor talk radio program. And if you'd like to be on our show tonight, we have a toll-free number that you can dial, statewide toll-free number, anywhere, actually anywhere in the world, I think you can call that number, but you have to call the entire number, even if you live locally in the Bangor area. And what is that number, acting host?
That number is 1-800-966-1039.
Now, that didn't sound like Bob Lehman, did it, Norm?
I hope not.
Not anywhere as close.
Oh. We're going to introduce our guests in just a moment. We have two guests in the studio tonight, and we've had them on the show before. They're veterans of broadcasting, so they know their way around a microphone, and we'll be talking to them in just a moment. First, though, the crew, the beloved crew who make this show possible week after week. The engineer behind the toggle switches and the gauges in there in the left seat, Mr. Norm Plord.
Good evening, everybody, and what a beautiful day.
Oh.
I was out in the garden, you know, kind of wrapping up things with tomatoes and peppers. And
yes, lovely this time of year.
Lovely time
Our
of year.
Our favorite time of year, right?
It really is.
And who do you have to the right? Introduce your other folks here.
I have our...
The old fart.
No, really. We have Jim, who's been around for a long time and great at what he does.
We call him the engineer emeritus, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Who's that other guy? The other good-looking guy.
And Scotty.
Scotty Bates.
Scotty Bates.
Yes.
Sky King.
Good evening. It's getting cold out there nights now.
Yeah, it's starting to get cooler.
Yeah, but I'm ready to head to camp. I'm heading to camp tomorrow for a few days.
Oh, good for you. Yeah, great time to be at camp.
Yes, it is.
Long John weather this week.
Long John weather for sure. Yes, sir. Hey, Bob Lehman's playing hooky. Professor Lehman is taking a sabbatical. He's down there at Grand Lake Stream with his bride, Alice, and we say hi to them if they're listening, and we hope they have a nice day, few days on the stream. Should be beautiful down there in Grand Lake Stream. And filling in for Bob tonight is our guest who agreed the last minute. I kind of railroaded her into this. She's one of our two guests tonight. She's the president of the United Blood Trackers, and she's here to be a guest and also the acting co-host, Suzanne Hamilton.
Good evening.
Nice to have you here.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
And your sidekick is from Ellsworth, and she's also a certified blood tracker. And her name is Lindsay Ware.
It is. Thanks for having us.
Nice to have you here, Lindsay. And both of these ladies, as I said, are the United Blood Trackers is an organization. We're going to learn a lot more about that in the next few minutes. But basically, it's an organization that you can bring aboard if you've wounded a big game animal and you're looking for somebody to find it. They have some wonderful little wire-haired dachshunds, right? Did I say that right?
Well, actually, the United Blood Tracker has all breeds of dogs.
All breeds of dogs.
Yes, it's a national organization, and all breeds of dogs. And we are, you know, dedicated to promoting the use of leash tracking dogs for finding wounded game, wounded large game. However, we have a finder tracker site where people can look for blood trackers, but the organization itself is geared towards training and, training new
sure.
blood trackers
yeah.
and showing them ropes.
Okay, we'll learn more about that in just a minute. Before we get to our guests, though, I want to remind you once again, if you want to be on our show tonight, if you have a question for either one of these ladies, the toll-free number is
1-800-966-1039.
All right, time now for Outdoor Digest, brought to you by the Northwood Sporting Journal and Maine Outdoor Publications. I just want to mention again, the October issue is on the newsstands, and check it out. We've got a grouse on the cover and a lot of great stories inside. If you'd like to get a subscription to the journal, you can do so by calling the office during the week at the 732-4880 and ask for Alicia. Let's see what else here. Also wanted to remind you that on Wednesday of this week, my wife and I, Diane, will celebrate our 55th wedding anniversary.
Wow.
Can you imagine that? She 55 years with the same woman. Huh?
Wow.
Haven't I done good?
Congratulations, Diane.
Thank you. Anyway, Diane and I are jumping in the truck and we're driving to Colorado to hunt elk for our 55th wedding anniversary. How about that, huh?
Nice.
And the year before that, I bought a nice canoe. The year before that, I got a nice deer rifle. So we're cooking.
My word.
Anyway, I won't be here for most of the month of October, and in my stead, the shoes will be well filled. The first week, Greg Burr is going to come in here and be the host. Then Bob Lehman will be back, and then Jim Thorne will be here the third week, and then the last week of the month, Greg Burr will be back. And Norm, make a note, would you? Make sure you ask Greg Burr if there really is a deep hole in Green Lake that's 325 feet deep. I don't believe it.
I'll write that down.
But isn't that incredible?
It is. If it does exist, it's amazing.
All right. We've got to find out the answer to that. Greg will know. Greg will know for sure. And that's about it on the program notes. A couple other things. Remember, the bird season is now officially open. You guys knew that, right?
No.
Yeah.
No.
What do you mean, no?
It's not October.
Oh, it's not open until the 20th. What is today?
30th, isn't it?
Yeah, it opened on the 28th. Yeah, the new law this year, Jim. Seriously.
Holy cow.
Yeah, you can. They did that so that a person could, the so-called cast and blast. You can hunt.
Fire three shots and I get home tonight.
Well, okay. But you can hunt birds like in the afternoon, go fishing in the morning. The State Department of Fish and Wildlife actually changed that specifically so that you could have an overlapping weekend, which I thought was a great idea. Anyway, you can officially hunt birds anywhere in Maine right now, as far as I know.
Wow.
So that's interesting. And we had, of course, the moose hunt was last week. If you were a moose hunter, we hope you did well. Hope you get a chance to fill your freezer with that delicious protein. And speaking of moose, Lindsay Ware, our guest tonight, had an exciting little encounter with a moose, and we're going to talk about that in just a few minutes. Let's see, what else? Bob's fishing report. We don't have that because Bob's not here.
No, we don't.
So we're going to dispense with the music.
A big boss.
Go ahead, Jim. Go ahead, Jim. Sing it through. So anyway, Bob's not here to do the fishing report, but I'm sure when he comes back, he'll be glad to give you an update on how things went down there at the stream. Okay, again, welcome to our show. Our guests are from the United Blood Trackers, and Suzanne Hamilton, Lindsay Ware, and we'll be talking with them. But first, we have an outdoor trivia question we'd like to dispose of. And how's that going to work, Suzanne?
Well, the outdoor trivia question is good for two flies from fly tyer Ron McCusick. The question is, if you are deer hunting, name three types of buck signs that you might look for.
All right. You ponder that. 1-800-966-1039. We'll be right back. Okay, you're listening to the Maine Outdoors on the Voice of Maine News Talk Network, 101.3 down there in Augusta, 103.9 Bangor, and 95.1 in Rockland, the Voice of Maine. Our guest tonight on Maine Outdoors, again, Suzanne Hamilton, Lindsay Ware, both are members of the United Blood Trackers. And they specialize in tracking wounded big game animals, and we'll be getting some stories from them in just a moment. First, we have a trivia question, and we're waiting for you to answer it. The question is, if you are deer hunting, name three types of buck signs you might look for. And Suzanne Hamilton, Judge Hamilton, is standing by to answer your question. Go ahead.
Go ahead, caller.
Go ahead, caller.
Hi. Hi, Suzanne.
Hi. What's your name?
Brian Smith. How are you?
Good, Brian. Do you have an answer for me?
Yes. Bucks scrapes on the ground, rubs on the trees, and big tracks with dew claw marks visible.
Wow, you just got yourself some darn good flies.
I'd say he nailed it, huh?
You nailed it.
Congratulations.
Well, had to use Suzanne and Buster once, so I know how incredible the legendary Buster was.
Thank you. He's 17 and 4 months right now and still going. So good to know you. Brian, make sure you stay on the line so they can take down your address so they can send you those flies, okay?
Okay.
Congratulations.
Thank you, Brian. Right, appreciate you listening.
Thank you.
Yeah. Hey, Norm, I've just decided Suzanne's so good at this, I'm just going to put up my headset and head home.
You found somebody there.
Yeah, she's good.
Yes.
Yeah. You better Bob better be careful down there.
I give very poor fishing reports.
Well, yeah, you did a great job. Okay, that was the correct answer. And there's one other thing too that is could be a sign to look for. Do you know what that might be, Lindsay? One other thing.
I do. It might be deer droppings.
Deer droppings, exactly. So there are four ways you can find a deer: scrapes, rubs, tracks, and droppings. And of course, Norm, you know the difference. No, Norm is on the line. I don't bug Norm.
No.
He's on the line. That's right.
The difference between a what?
Jim, you know the difference between a scrape and a rub, right?
Of course I do.
Of course you do. Do you think I was patronizing you to ask that question?
Scrape is a scratch. A rub is a rub on the tree.
There you go. Exactly right. Okay, let's get down to business here. And we appreciate the calls on the trivia question. And that gentleman will receive a couple of nice flies that have been donated by famous fly tyer Ron McCusick. I think he lives out in there in Corinna. And we're all set there, Norm, right?
We're all set.
Okay. You know the difference between a scrape and a rub, right?
Yes. Oh,
of course
another
you do.
Call coming.
All right, another call coming in. Okay, first I'd like to get maybe give the listeners a chance to know you two. Let's start with you, Lindsay. How did you wind up being a blood tracker?
Well, it started off with my dog. I was looking for something to do with him that involved his nose. And I've been a hunter for some years. And the two kind of, you know, I kind of got interested in it. I saw a little tiny blurb about that there's this license available in Maine to track wounded game with your dog. So I started kind of looking into it. And I eventually heard about this woman, Suzanne Hamilton, and I really wanted to learn from her. I had initially read this fantastic book called Tracking Dogs for Finding Wounded Deer
by John Jonanay.
And I read that book and I was like, this is awesome. I want to do this. Yeah. I need to find out, you know, somebody that's doing this so I can learn from them. And really at the time, the only person that was really doing it in a dedicated way was Suzanne Hamilton. And so I called her up randomly one day. It was like I was calling a famous person up and I was very nervous and was talking to her and was kind of, you know, oh man, I'd be interested to go out and learn with you. And that's kind of how it started. And then once we eventually started tracking together, we instantly became extremely close friends. And yes. I got totally hooked on it. And partially in the beginning from, we talked about Buster a little bit earlier, from watching her and Buster work. And I was just hooked. And then I've just...
What breed of dog do you use?
So I have two dogs. I have a Labrador who I started tracking with, and he's been my veteran tracker. He's pretty much semi-retired now. He's 10 years old and having some back issues.
Yeah.
My dog that I use the most these days is my German wire-haired dachshund, which is...
related to Fritzy, right?
Yes. He is Fritzy's father.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
In fact, I failed to introduce Fritzy. We had another guest that I failed to mention. It's a five-month-old dachshund, right?
German wire-haired dachshund, yes.
German wire-haired dachshund. Yeah. My daughter has a miniature dachshund, but that's different,
yeah,
right?
It's a little bit different. These are bred specifically for the forestry service in Europe.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, Fritzy is here with us right now, and I'm amazed. I learned during commercial break that Fritzy's only 5 months old, and she's already after game tracking, right?
I haven't yet put her on a live deer track. She's ready to do it. It's just that I've been gone a lot, but she's already passed the beginner test, UBT, United Blood Tracker test, beginner, and then she did also the advanced test and passed that with flying colors. So she's totally ready to track right now.
So she's your main dog right now, right?
No, my main dog's Maggie, her auntie.
You had her last time.
She's 9 years old, yeah.
Oh, okay. Before we talk about the dogs and tracking, a little bit about you personally. You're mainly into horses. How did you end up doing this?
I think I needed a hobby, one that did not include just sitting around on the couch, because I'm very physically active.
Yeah.
I grew up with a German wire-haired dachshund because my uncle, who's a forester in Europe, had them. So I knew them to be versatile hunting dogs. And I've been into large dogs all my life. And I said, if I ever have a small dog, it'll be one of those because they're so cute. And I just got lucky. I fell into a dog buster that turned out to be one of the all-time greats, tracking dogs. Turns out one of the most prestigious breeders in North America of the European Wirehair Dachshunds were interested in breeding to him. They wanted to see him work. And I said, okay, work what? And I went to visit them in New York and got put on a blood trail and never looked back. I was so hooked to watch my dog work.
Yeah.
And, you know, I started. He was a prodigy, started really good right away. I was the idiot at the end of the leash. I had to learn. my dog just had it by nature, and it's just been so fun learning. And after 17 years of tracking wounded game, and these days we take about 100 tracks a season per person, we still learn something every track.
Yeah, wow. So you actually have done that many animals this year? You track that many?
Not so far this year, but
before season the
just started.
Out?
Yeah.
Before the season's over?
But each of us now, by the end of the fall season, we've over 100
okay.
tracks.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So the breed of animal that's used for this blood tracking can be any number of types of dogs?
Any dog that has a nose and likes to use it can learn how to track. However, I'd like to warn people taking their pets out, it makes an awful mess of a track. We do train these dogs. These specific dogs, these German Wirehair Dachshunds, are bred for this specifically. There is many other dogs, beagle hounds specifically, that are very suitable. But it takes work, takes dedication, and it takes actually, you know, you have to teach the dog the ropes.
So to be a certified tracker, the person, the human being, has to get certified, but the dog does as well?
Oh, yes.
How do you, what's the checklist for training? How do you know the dog's ready? You have different trials?
I know my dog is ready when I start, in training my dog, I start as a very early on puppy, 6, 7, 8 weeks old. I start laying little liver drags, maybe 10 yards, maybe 30 yards long. I start putting a 90 degree check into the, and first teach the dog how to follow their nose and how to take a check. A check is a turn. So a dog needs to learn that a trail can go, and then they have to take a right or a left, or maybe do a circle to figure out in which direction it went. I then go on to where probably by 2, 3 months old, my dogs will know how to take a 300, 400-yard line with 2 90-degree checks. And after that, you start aging the lines where you say, well, I'm going to wait 2 hours, 6 hours, 8 hours, overnight, 20 hours old lines for them to run. And then I start playing with the terrain where if you go from grass to forest, dry leaves, dirt roads, paved roads, rivers, brooks, and you have to teach the dog how to work through the different terrains. And it's not so easy in the beginning because they have to things change, scent change, a breeze, a downhill will make, if you think of fog, the way fog will waft and go down into valleys, it's like that with scent. So when it comes to the dogs, they work, and as humans, we have to really learn to read them, and we have to also learn to read the signs, the breeze, the inclines, and there are times where we might have to help the dog. You know, we like to say, trust your dog, and we trust our dog, and we follow our dog, but there are sometimes difficulties where we have to help them, and it's teamwork. It's total teamwork. I'm not the boss of these dogs when I go on a track at all.
I remember the one time I went with you when you had Buster tracking that buck up in Old Town.
Mm-hmm.
I remember the thing that really impressed me with the most is, as I recall, we ran out of the dog ran out of scent. I think that was the thing, and the dog knew enough to come back to try to recapture the scent. Isn't that what happened?
Yeah,
at the time?
She does that already.
She
it's
does
pretty
that
amazing.
Already, yeah.
She at 4.5 months, she did a tracking test and she overshot a line. She went about 20 yards down the trail and whooped it in 180, came back, found the way in the turn. It's really fun to watch.
Yeah, I can see why it must be captivating to get involved in this, because there are so many nuances to the whole thing. It isn't just a case of getting on the blood trail. There's so many variables.
Well, the biggest thing is the forensics too. You know, when we get a call, we do, we have a long interview with our hunters, just because the forensics about it all, between that and the work with the dogs, quite extensive.
Forensics meaning figuring out where the animal was hit, right?
Yes, finding out where the animal was hit, finding out, you know, trying to figure out what our chances are of finding it if we go now, or maybe we should wait and we'd have an increased chance of finding it, all that sort of stuff. You know, what does the color of the blood mean? Does it mean anything? All sorts of basically interpreting what is going on.
How did the deer act?
As a deer hunter, over my lifetime, I've been involved in a couple of cases of wounded animals, and I know there's a lot of mystery to it, but you folks, you do it so often, and you get so involved in the intricacies of it, you must develop a pretty good knowledge of so-called forensics. You must have a pretty good handle on where that animal was hit from your experiences, right?
Yeah, and we improve on that all the time, and just like anything having to do with humans, you know, we're not always 100% right, but we're getting very good at being able to take little bits of information and really kind of figure out what's going on from very, you know, little amounts of evidence.
You have a moose story, too, we're going to get at.
I do.
Right after the break, you stay with us here on Maine Outdoors.
More Maine Outdoors next.
Okay, we're back with Maine Outdoors, and our guests tonight are Suzanne Hamilton and Lindsay Ware. Both are members of the United Blood Trackers of America, and they specialize in tracking your wounded animal, whether it's a bear, a deer, a moose, or what have you. And if you have a question for them, we have a statewide toll-free number that we urge you to dial. And by the way, if you call us, make sure you turn your radio down. That way, it won't be distracting for you to get an echo. And we have a little delay system here, right, Jim?
That's correct.
And what is that, 9 seconds?
About 8 seconds.
Yeah. And that's in case somebody gets profane, right?
Yes, and other things.
Comes in handy.
Okay. Yep. But we don't have that problem very often. That's great. So anyway, turn your radio down if you want to call us, and we welcome you to put a question to these ladies. They're here, and they're more than happy to answer your questions. One of the things we wanted to talk about before we run out of time, Lindsay had a pretty hairy experience the other night tracking a wounded bull moose. As you know, the first moose season in Maine opened last Monday and ran the week, and apparently somebody wounded a large bull moose, right?
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us a little bit about your experience?
Sure. It's definitely a good cautionary tale. And this bull moose was mortally wounded, but it was not dead yet when we came upon it. And it was, as is pretty common with bull moose, prepared to defend itself. And we did not see it. It was being very smart. It was behind a large mound of vegetation just off to the side of the trail. And
This is daytime.
This is daytime. Yep. Yes, this is during the day. And so when we were approaching it, didn't realize it was laying there, it came up and actually charged us. And
wow.
Yes, and actually ran over me and my dog a little bit, right over the top of us. But we fortunately were not harmed. It could have been a very, very bad situation.
Yeah.
Just have some bruises from getting hit with either legs or antlers. I'm not really sure which, but
wow.
So it's kind of a good story to talk about as far as when it comes to safety, these sorts of things, and also to kind of talk about the gravity of what we're doing here.
Oh, yeah.
Is that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, those moose are very large and very intimidating. So did you get banged up at all?
I have some bruises, and that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm very lucky.
You are very lucky, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So if you approach that situation again, would you do anything differently?
That's a good question. You know, It's a very good question. We talk about safety a lot, and actually at this year's United Blood Tracker has a yearly seminar that we do usually in a different state every year. Right. And Suzanne and I actually did a talk about safety. And so we like to think that we're pretty safety conscious. We track a lot of bears, so safety always comes up when it comes to tracking bears. This moose, I had jumped it earlier in the track, and it did display some sign that it was going to want to defend itself. It had a little bit of a bluff charge when it left its bed. And so I kind of think, you know, maybe the only other safer thing I could have done is to give up the track at that point. Hi, Fritzy.
Hey, Fritzy. Let's hear that again for Fritzy.
but this was a mortally wounded, you know, bull moose that we did not want to leave. I mean, any moose. We did not want to leave a mortally wounded animal in the woods. So we made the leash very short on the dog. I had a very experienced, reliable guide with me that was right there with me. We were going very slow. We were looking ahead. We were trying to do everything right and safe. But
what is the name of your dog?
My dog's name is Aldo.
Aldo, and that's the father of Fritz.
The father of Fritzy.
And is Aldo okay?
He's okay.
Must have scared the dickens out of Aldo, too.
I'm sure it did. I'm sure he was scared. He was actually under me when the moose went over us. So he was shielded.
On top of the dog.
So you threw your body between the moose and the dog, right?
Because of the adrenaline, I actually don't really remember much about what happened. I remember the moose hitting me in the shoulder.
Yeah.
The guide told me afterwards, because I was right in front of him and he saw everything, that I basically threw myself on the dog and hit the deck. And I don't remember doing that. I just remember thinking, oh, I'm about to get very badly hurt.
Yeah.
And then when the moose went over me, I remember thinking, oh, wow, that was not as bad as I thought it was going
to
be.
Well, we're very glad that we're speaking to you personally tonight, not in the hospital. That's great.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm glad you survived well.
You know, we've talked about this a lot, and two moose tracks I had, I don't get a lot of moose tracks, but two of those moose have turned their heads and slung their antlers at me and started coming towards me when we dispatched them. And we are now thinking that while we've always thought of bear being probably the most dangerous animal to track, the percentage says otherwise. We think moose is by far.
Oh, yeah. And you don't have, you do not, I can tell you from personal experience, you do not have to wound a bull moose to have him charge you. I've been charged deer hunting. Scary stuff.
Very scary.
Very scary, yeah. Mm-hmm. How about bear? Have you had any bad encounters, with intimidating encounters with wounded bear?
Well, I've been clacked at and stuff.
You've been what?
They clack their teeth when they feel threatened.
Mm-hmm. And
I've been clacked at, like, at 6 feet away, but I'm pretty handy with my .44 mag.
All right. Okay.
It does help.
Yeah. I was bear hunting one time, and I watched, I don't shoot, you know, anything with a sow with cubs, but I watched a sow and the cubs, and the mother would feed, the sow would feed, then she'd back off and let the cubs come in, but she'd let the cubs feed for about 30 seconds, and then she'd clack her teeth, and when she clacked her teeth, you know, like that, then the cubs would back off.
Yeah.
So that means she's angry.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, definitely.
Lindsay has a really smart dog. She's had close encounters, and Gander, her bear dog, he is so good at saying, it's alive, it's right there. And you do more bear than I do, Lindsay. Lindsay has a really good gut instinct when to back out.
Tell us about have you had some interesting bear?
Yeah, I mean, nothing as harrowing as the bull moose story, but the dog that Susanna was talking about, Gander, he has this amazing ability to communicate to me when there's a live bear. And
how does he do? What does he do?
So one example, we were tracking a bear one morning. It was still alive from the night before, but very sick and laying in a bed, and it looked dead. And so, but he knew it wasn't. And so we were coming kind of around a corner, and he just stopped. And all of his hackles went up, and he started this little growl, and he just froze and would not go any further and was just kind of growling and doing these low barks. And I went around the corner to see what he was growling at, and there was what looked like a dead bear. And I told the guide and the hunter, and I said, there's your bear. And they're like, oh, great. I'm like, I'm pretty sure that even though it looks dead, it is not dead, because my dog, this dog always tells me, and sure enough, it lifted its head, and then we were able to euthanize it and end the track. But that's not the first time he's done stuff like that.
A gander is your bear specialist dog.
He's kind of my bear specialist. Yeah, when I really started getting into tracking more and getting more calls, it was a lot from the bear community, and he really was kind of raised as a tracking dog on tracking bears, and it was always kind of his favorite animal to track, and I love tracking bears behind gander.
Exciting. And what breed is that dog?
Gander. He's a lab.
He's a lab?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What type of lab? Black lab?
Black lab. Black he's lab? Not purebred either. He's a rescue from down south. And
yeah, those labs are special, aren't
they? Are.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Well, you guys have interesting experiences. Wow. That's great. We're going to have to take a really short break to make a buck. Is that okay?
I think that's okay.
Oh, all right. Bob Lehman normally handles this. You probably don't know General Appliance and Brewer, right?
I don't.
Okay, well, I'll take it. Unless Norm wants to do it.
No, you go right ahead.
All right. I just want to remind everybody that this show is sponsored in part every week and has been for many, many years by General Appliance and Brewer, the place to go for all of your appliance needs, whether you're talking about propane, electric. They have a complete line of both new and used appliances. They also sell... What is it they sell, Jim?
Top-of-the-line compost toilets. Ride the wave, baby.
All right. Top-of-the-line compost toilets. And you don't need to plug those in, right?
No. Chemical only.
No septic tank? No leach fields?
Nope. No stems, fantastic. No seeds that you don't need.
That's right. And the head guy over there, the head shed man there, is Al Elkin. And he's a guy who's... he's very knowledgeable about his business. He's been in it for many years, and he's a great guy to do business with. They service everything they sell, stand behind all their products. So we encourage you to patronize them as we do. General Appliance and Brewer. And where are they located on, what's that street there in Brewer?
91 Center Street in Brewer.
Thank you. And the number is right on the top of my head. It's 987-3914. 989-3714. General Appliance and Brewer, the place to go for all of your appliance needs. We urge you to patronize them as we do.
The nicest people you'll ever deal with, and very affordable.
Yes, sir, and they sell our books, Bob's books and my books, right over
there.
So check them out.
And they're very affordable.
All right. If somebody wants to call and ask either of you ladies a question, what's the number, Suzanne?
Oh, I'm sorry. I was sleeping on the job.
Okay.
1-800-966-1039.
That's okay, because I feel right at home, because Bob Lehman sleeps a lot here, too. All right. Give us a call. If you're a deer hunter, you must have had experiences you'd like to ask these ladies about. And incidentally, the other aspect of their job, which is very critical, is not only do they have to have dogs that are well-trained, know how to handle them in the woods in a tracking scenario, but they also have to have an understanding of what Suzanne referred to as forensics. They have to be able to look at the type of blood, the situation, and make a decision about where that animal might have hit, which I guess is a factor in how you decide to track that animal, right?
Absolutely.
What have you learned about forensics that might be of some value to people who are deer hunters or big game hunters of any kind?
Well, we always do an interview with the hunters we track for, just to get a picture of what we're running into. And important things are, my first question is, did you shoot this with a gun? If yes, what caliber? Did you shoot it with archery, expanded broadhead, fixed broadhead? How high were you in the tree stand? How far was the shot? What angle did you have? Did the deer quarter to, quarter away? Did you get a broadside shot? Was the animal moving? How did it act when you shot it? Did it jump up in the front, kick out in the back? Did it just stand there and look like it didn't even get hit? Did it maybe fall to the ground? All those details help me right in from the get-go and what kind of injury we might have, frontal, center, then there's the type of blood. There's liver blood that's different from lung blood, that's different from muscle blood. Muscle blood easily clots. We have nothing is for certain. Like you can have a gut shot where you get right away, you see you grainy blood and it's smelly. But you can also have an animal that has just normal muscle blood and later starts getting blood poisoning, and then only do you see that that there's also stomach blood involved. However, by the fact how the deer acted when he got shot, that gives us an idea that that might be what we have, and so we might give it more time rather than less, or, you know, you can have bone on the hit side. There's so many factors. And so for us, this is really fun. Not just do we get to play with our dogs, we get to play detective too.
Yeah, I was going to say that's really what you're doing. Right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I always loved puzzle games.
Yeah. What's a front kick, and what's the difference between a front and a back kick in the hit?
Well, the mule kick oftentimes it's further back. We have animals, you know, dropping in the front. It might have gotten leg hit or front shoulder hit, or there's just so many different.
There's a lot of lore around the mule kick too, and we hear that from people like, oh, I know it was a good hit because of the mule kick, or I know it was a bad hit because of the mule kick, you know. Right. And the mule kick is actually just a
reflex.
Yes. You could spook a deer by making a loud noise and they could mule kick.
Oh yeah, sure.
You can have a perfect shot and they'll mule kick. Yeah. You can have a not so perfect shot and have a mule kick. So that's the.
But then all the other information that goes around, that comes up in the conversation about the angle and the what did it do after, and it all just adds up, and then we get to see if we're right, and oftentimes we learn something.
Yeah. So if I call you and ask you, tell you that I've wounded a buck and I'd like you to come and help me find it, you ask me a lot of questions, and then do you make a decision like, I guess I can't help you or I can help you? Do you ever say no to folks?
Oh, we, unfortunately, there's not enough of us to go around, and we all say no often. We, at this point, we get so busy that we really try to help the hunters that where we think that we can actually recover the deer. We, this time of season, expanded archery, we also go out just to go out and give people peace of mind, and a lot of times that's what it ends up being. But we really like to have a chance to recover an animal that needs to recover so it doesn't go into coyote food.
Okay. So if somebody answers the questions and your experience tells you that probably it was a miss, are you going to you tell the hunter that based on your experience?
Why, over the phone, it's really hard
for
me to say to you that's a miss. Yeah. I've had people call me and say, friend of mine, that said, my kid had a complete miss, we think. And I said, well, it's a really good friend of mine. So I went out and put the dog on the complete miss and went 300 yards and found one drop of blood, and around the corner found the deer. So so that's that. It's hard. We don't really make any promises on the phone. One thing, and this might be a really good one to mention, one thing that is pretty sure during gun season, a hit that we cannot get is the infamous high back hit. High back means there's a spine, and over the spine are these spinous processes. They're the prongs that come out of the spine that stick up. When you have a high shot, and sometimes, you know, between the fat of the deer and the hair, the winter hair of the deer, you get a lot of space between the top of the top line of the deer and the spine, and you get just above the spine, these animals go down instantly. They go down like they've been hit by lightning. And when a deer goes down like that, it's really good to just reload and just put another bullet in, because 50% of the times, people hit the spine and the animal stays, and the other 50%, suddenly the animal comes to, jumps up, and runs away, and we can't catch it because nothing vital's been hit. They do heal up. They bleed a lot sometimes. Sometimes they don't. Sometimes they do. It can look like carnage, but we cannot catch this animal.
Okay. What is the, what's your average, Lindsay, what's your average rate of success? Do you have any idea what it is?
So that's a common question, and it's going to depend on how you define success. So I would say if you are defining success from a blood tracker's point of view, then success is, our dog tracked the animal and extended the trail beyond the point of loss that the hunter had. So if you look at it like that, where we successfully tracked deer, because the dogs can't control whether the animal's dead or alive. Right. So from a blood tracker's point of view, we're successful if we were able to continue the line. Maybe we had to give up because we decided that the animal wasn't dying or mortally wounded.
Well, if you're able to tell a hunter that the animal is probably going to survive.
Yeah, we consider that successful.
Peace of mind for the hunter as well, right?
Right. So yeah. If you look at it like that, then the success rate is extremely high.
Is it?
For the most part, these dogs are going to extend the trail. There's always exceptions. There's always complicating factors, but the success rate is high in that regards. So then if you look at it, okay, what's the success rate recovery of animals that are dead and recoverable? It's actually probably really high. If we look at overall success rate, which includes all the animals that we track that aren't dead and that we confirm that they're still going, national average is usually around 40%, 30 to 40% for on-leash tracking.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, of course, people don't call us when drops right there.
Right,
the animal,
yeah.
Okay, so one has to say, people call us when they're in trouble. And so, unfortunately, probably only 30 to 40% of the animals that have been shot where the hunter ran into trouble are actually going to die.
Right. Another way to look at it is sometimes there's a very good reason why the hunter couldn't find the animal themselves. It's because it's not there to be found.
Yeah.
It is long gone and up, already healing and clotting
one of the, up. One of the experiences I've had as a deer hunter is that I think too many deer hunters give up too easily. And I don't know what the answer to that is, but so many times that I have found deer that were almost impossible to find. I didn't use you folks because back then you weren't around. But I'm sure you want to encourage hunters to make sure they follow through thoroughly. Because a lot of times it looked like you didn't have a hit when you did, right? Would you agree with that?
Yes.
You hesitated.
No, I absolutely agree.
You do agree.
There's many hit sites that don't have blood on them. And
no hair, no blood.
No hair, no blood.
Yep.
Yeah, but a dead deer 100 yards away, right?
Yes,
yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's very sad. Happens over and over.
Yeah. If somebody wants to call you, what's the decision factor? I mean, somebody wounds a deer. What would you encourage them to do? To call you right off or to exhaust all avenues that they personally can do? Or?
Oh, yeah, please don't do that. Because I like it best when people see that maybe they've gone 50 yards, 100 yards, there's no dead animal, blood trail's sparse, they know it's going to take them hours to track. Just give a call. Mark what you have, if possible, toilet paper, tape, flashlight, Dunkin' Donuts, cup,
napkins,
whatever. Mark what you have because it's so helpful for us to lock the dog in to a clean line. And when people grit an area and do everything that's possible, and then I bring the dog in, it can take my dog an hour to cut through all the footprints and all the gritting. And in the same time, I can help three other people. Putting a dog on the line, running the line, and after 15, 20 minutes, half an hour, I can tell them the deer is either still running and will come back later, or it's dead, or it's not catchable.
Okay, another question. I'm a guy living up in, say I'm in Enfield, and I wound a deer, and I could go on the website, United Blood Trackers, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And I see a list of 13 different trackers, including you two. Should I try to find the person who's nearest to me geographically? How do you suggest that work?
Yeah, and the website actually has a really neat function there where you can put in your zip code if you're not sure exactly where some of these towns are. Like, we're all listed there with our towns.
Yep.
If you're not sure where some of these towns are, you can put your zip code in and it'll actually help you. It'll
decide
show you
which,
the ones that are, it'll sort it by who's closest to you.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And do you know all the other trackers? Do you have social meetings or whatever?
Some of them. Some of them we are extremely close to and network with a lot, kind of move calls back and forth depending on who can take them. Other folks we don't know as well. Some of the newer folks we maybe haven't met yet. But so for the most
somebody called you and you couldn't make it, you might recommend call Paul House up in Lee or whatever? Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. We try our best to do that whenever possible.
I see.
It's really important to be able to get these guys help. So
Yeah.
We have a handful of us. There's five of us that very, very close and keep having each other's back. Is to me, it's very important that we don't leave people hanging. Yeah, I don't like not showing. I don't like it when truckers don't show up or don't answer phone calls. To me, it's very, very important. Okay. And yeah, I vouch for this lot.
Do you have a geographical parameter that you limit you?
Depends.
It does on the situation.
Bear and moose, we travel quite a bit. Expanded archery, we travel, and as it comes to gun season, I've been staying within 45 minutes to an hour of my house.
Okay.
So get too busy.
If I call Lindsay and she comes to find my deer, do I get a bill for $500? How does that work?
So I can answer for Susanna and I personally. We, both of us, do it on, we call it like a donation basis.
Yeah.
So it's essentially, one another way to describe it is like, you know, you kind of pay what you think it's worth.
Sure.
Or what you can to help out with our expenses. Anything like that is greatly appreciated by us, and that's how we operate.
You guys burn up a lot of gas, right?
We do, and put wear and tear on our vehicles and equipment and, you know, all that stuff is expensive. So any kind of contribution to that is super appreciated. Some people may do it otherwise, and in Maine, you can do it another way if you would like to. It's one of the few hunting-related services that you could charge a set fee for, but many of us just like to do it that way. Yeah. It works. It's a nice way to do it.
Is that the way with all of the licensed trackers?
No.
Some of them charge, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Some of them can't do charge, and they can. Yeah. Yeah. So that's just us and the other trackers that we know that are close to that we just choose to operate that way.
Well, we commend you for the good work you guys do. That's wonderful.
Thank you.
We appreciate you coming to be on our program tonight. It's been very informative, and I appreciate that. And be very careful with the moose.
I will.
And thank you again.
Oh, it's always good of you to have us, Paul.
And good tracking.
Next week,
your host will be Greg Burr. I'll be heading west, and I'll see you guys the 1st of November, right here on
Maine Outdoors.